Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon, and welcome to West Side Visions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am Brother Tony Bullock with my co-host, Sister Eileen Reed. Sister Reed, are you there?
I am here, Brother Bullock. It's going to be a good show tonight.
Yes, indeed. Tonight is a show I'm looking forward to doing, and one that we probably need, considering all the things that have gone on for, I won't even say last couple of months, I'll say for the last couple of decades. And every once in a while, there's nothing wrong with talking about your own. And we get a negative light shine on us so much that every once in a while, it's just nice to talk about the things that go on with ours, good, bad, and different. So, Sister Reed, how was your day today?
You know, today was a good day. It is, the weather has calmed down somewhat in Fresno, or also known as Mississippi Fresno. It was only like 91 degrees today. That's cool for us.
Oh, yeah, so I will take 91 degrees in the know in a minute.
Yes, indeedy. So today was a very good day. I've been training my puppy, and he's been a very good boy. He's learning how to go number one and number two on puppy pads, so his mama don't have to chase him around the yard and pick up poop and all that good stuff. So it has been a most excellent day, Brother Tony. And how was your day? Most more important,
you know what?
How was
my day? My day was good. It was nice. It was peaceful. And, you know, it laid back. And every once in a while, I need that. Had some news to deal with a good person that I'm health-wise. But after talking with them and giving them some direction, things are a little bit better. You know, sometimes you have to convince people to slowly roll and take care of themselves first, because if you don't, nobody else will.
That's true. And, you know, one of the things about our culture that some people don't understand, I mean, greater European society might want to pay black people as lazy, but the truth of the matter is that usually we're working ourselves to the bone to get different stuff done, whether it's at home, at the job, in the community, or whatever it might be. And, and so comes the advent of eating on the fly, eating wrong things, and, you know, having our health suffer for it. You know, whether it's high blood pressure and cholesterol, which I have, which is hereditary in some of us, and some of it is just, you know, whether it's addiction to soda, like I have a problem with regular Coke. Some people have a problem with, you know, alcohol or street drugs. So overwork and health issues kind of go hand in hand for black folks. So I'm glad you gave that advice. I hope, you know, that it was well received.
You know, it was, and that's the whole thing. You know, you kind of, and you're right. We got a real bad problem being, as black Americans. We go hard. And when we do, it's like you say, it's usually for the job, for something we are tied to, the church, other outside interests, other folks in the family. We go hard, and sometimes you overlook yourself. And like you say, we eat on the run. We eat on the fly. And everything we pick up, It ain't right for us, but it's something quick and simple.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell
That's
ourselves,
right.
let me do this until I can get to where I can sit down and fix me something to eat. Then you sit down and fix you something to eat, and you still do what you ain't supposed to, because you in the back of your head you're thinking, okay, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got. We are the kings and queens of multitasking.
Yes, indeed. Oh, you ain't never lied on that one. This is true. That's a true statement, and most of the people who are listening to the show tonight can understand and appreciate that, especially if you are a member of that sandwich generation where you're taking care of children or grandchildren, and then you're taking care of your parents or your grandparents, and you're kind of caught in the middle of that sandwich. I mean, what's more important, making sure the kids are fed or making sure that you're fed? So it's tough, Brother Tony. You know, we're all doing just the best that we can possibly do. That's all we can
do. You are absolutely correct about that. And so tonight, folks, as we ease into our program, I'm going to do a segment that I always do, and I've decided to give this segment a name. You know, at the beginning of our show, I always like to drop a little tidbit. So from here on out, you'll be hearing a segment for maybe 3 to 4 minutes, and that segment is called Well Damn. And starting off Well Damn this evening, good old proud boy Enrique Tarro gets a record 22 years in prison for his participation in January 6th.
Wow, 22, huh?
22 years. So far, that's the most time anyone who participated in January 6th, and those who got prison terms, this is the longest one so far. I like it. I have no problem with it. None whatsoever. And I heard people earlier today saying, well, why did the Afro-Cuban guy get such a long sentence, and he was involved like everybody else? Okay, let me say this. For those black folks who was making excuses for this guy, why are you out there making excuses for someone who supports white supremacy, who supports overthrowing the government, who supports doing harm to your black ass? I don't want to hear he got the longest sentence because he was black. No, he got the longest sentence because he was stupid. He shouldn't have been involved in this anyway. How you Afro-Cuban and you are flying the flag of racism, white racism, white supremacy?
Well, there are some Cubans who are in Cuba who think they are, you know, who think that they are white. You know, that definition that we talk about whiteness on this show. And, you know, I look at it this way, Brother Tony. I'm just going to break it down to the brass knuckles. Even with good behavior, he's doing at least a decade, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to happen.
So I don't feel bad for him. I really don't.
I do not feel bad for that brother. You know, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
Well, this is what happens when you know, how is it that you always say if you know, going to the dance, you got to pay the band? Well, he wanted to be a leader in this movement, and so a leader has to take the consequences. That's part of leadership.
Exactly.
So he should just take it and say, "Oh well, you know," because it doesn't matter what he says or does, because he's going. You know, unless he's dead, and that's okay with the system too, because black lives, we all know how they feel about us, and black lives matter to us, but it does not matter to the system. So, oh well.
We'll see.
Bye.
You know, like you said. It don't matter to the system, but see, he wasn't thinking in terms of a black life.
Mm-mm.
See, he had decided that I'm going to run with them cats. So, no, I don't feel sorry for him. Deep in the heart of Texas, deep in the heart of Texas, Dan Patrick, who is the lieutenant governor of Texas, has ruled in favor of suspended Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton in the first major move of his impeachment trial. Now, Dan Patrick is the lieutenant governor of Texas, and he and Ken Paxton, I'm just going to say it up front, they are birds of a feather in many, many ways. And I'll let y'all do what you want with that, but birds of a feather always flock together.
Yeah, they do.
Now,
yes, they do.
He is acting as the presiding president or judge with the power to issue subpoenas and compel attendance of witnesses. And he stated that, Paxton stated that he would not testify in his trial and that his lawyer, Tony Busby, said in a statement earlier that he will not dignify the illegal house actions by testifying. Now,
really?
You done committed crime after crime after crime as the acting as the attorney general in Texas, and you finally get caught, but somehow them wanting to get you out of office is illegal.
Well, you know what I said,
Patrick, go ahead, Sister Reed.
No, I was just saying that's that MAGA logic, y'all, where you're both the perpetrator and the victim at the same time. Go ahead, Brother Tony.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I personally have a problem with the fact that in you know, a lot of these southern states write certain rules in their state government that allows the GOP the back of someone in a party that they love to protect them. And that's all I see with the actions of Dan Patrick. You know, I can remember when I was there, I would always hear, you know, well, you know, the Big Three got this covered. And the Big Three was considered Governor Hot Wheels Abbott, Dan Patrick, and Ken Paxton. And I can tell you, three of the dirtiest politicians in state government you ever want to see. And it is things of this nature that make you look at the country and go, well, damn.
Exactly. And, you know, Brother Tony, and we need to remind listeners that a lot of these people are in power because of the huge backlash that was unleashed after, you know, because of Barack Obama's 8 years of presidency. That there are all these races that are in office now, they're part of that backlash in this country. So, but you're absolutely right about Greg. I couldn't live in Texas. I you know, I have a lot of relatives there. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could do it.
You know, I lived there for almost 10 years, and I can tell you honestly, when I was there, there was another idiot who was the governor, Rick Perry.
When I tell you
there's stupid Rick Perry, there's exactly what I mean. You know, I'm just going to be honest with you. Best governor Texas ever had was Ann Richards.
Yes, she was. Come on now, that's my girl. I like
Ann Richards. Was about business.
Yes, she was.
She was honest. She was upfront, and she didn't allow them good old boys to push around her or the people of the state.
That's true.
And Ann Richards dealt with people on a person by person basis. She didn't look at you and deal with you because you was black. She didn't look at you and deal with you because you was Hispanic or white. She dealt with you in the way people are supposed to deal with folks. She didn't care about your political party. She cared about getting things done and what you were doing. And if you was about right, Yeah, if you were about right, she stood with you. If you was about doing wrong, she fought against you. That was Ann Richards.
That's true. I remember her making a statement talking about that whole bipartisan thing where she was talking about, I call him Little Bush, but she was talking about W. And she just laughed and said, you know, he just doesn't know any better. And cracked up like a mother would crack up at one of her kids or something. And I said, you know what? She's right on the money, because that was during that whole discussion where they were saying that W was so much, for lack of a better word, stupider than his father, you know, who was a pilot in World War II and decorated and all this stuff. Well, yeah, he didn't have to be smart. He's a legacy. So, but anyway, that's what Ann Richards said about Little Bush, and I crack up when I think about it, because she had it on the money. He was terrible. You know, he didn't have a lot of brain cells to rub together, and he just was, you know, entrenched in that whole I'm better than whoever. And the way he handled Katrina was proof of that. So Ann called it right. She called it right.
She called it right. She called it right. And my all-time favorite story today was everybody's favorite boy, King Mayonnaise, better known as Elon Musk, taking aim at the Anti-Defamation League and threatening to sue them, claiming that the Civil Rights Organization was causing advertisers to flee his struggling platform. Let me say something about that, because I'm on X, as they call it, but it ain't X. It's Twitter. It'll always be Twitter. He wants to claim that, you know, they're making advertisers leave, talking about to platform name of the matter of anti-Semitism. It looks like we have no choice but to file a lawsuit against the Anti-Defamation League. But see, here is the real problem. Since King Mayonnaise took over Twitter, he has allowed white supremacy groups, hate groups, to run amok on that platform. People like Charlie Kirk, the Orange Blunder. He's allowed these people to come back, Marjorie Three Toes Green, to come on there and just say some of the most vile things they want about blacks, gays. And the attack on the Jewish community is nonstop. It's an onslaught on that platform. So he can say what he want, but they called him right. And they're not the ones making people leave. Smart people are leaving because they realize they don't want their name tied to him.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Wow. Well,
so, yeah.
So, Brother Tony, with that whole MAGA line that you always want to blame the other guy, you never take responsibility yourself. You always blame somebody else for your problems. Wow. That's deep.
Yes, indeed. So I can truly say today, well, damn.
Well, I like that segment. That was cool. That was cool.
Yes, Sister Reed. And it's going to be one. That's what we're adding to our platform. And anytime you come up with something that you want to throw in there, you go right ahead.
Okay. I'm making a note of this, Brother Tony, because, you know, my memory ain't what it used to be. I be damned. Okay, got it.
Girl, that's what we all do. That's what we all do. But tonight, listeners, you want to call in and join in, as a vast many of you to do. Our number is 563-999-3043, because we're getting ready to talk about history. And what a lot of you don't understand is black history, it's just not about particular moments, although they are, but black history is ongoing. Black history that happens every day, and not all black history. There are many of us who have done historic things that people will never hear about.
True. That is very true, Brother Tony. I have to say, you know, we do a lot of heavy stuff on this show, so it's always fun when we can do something that's a little bit lighter but still provocative and thought-provoking. I especially liked our cookout show, so when you suggested that we do this show about Black history, past, present, and future, I was like, you know what? This is right on the money, because we are at a critical time in history right now as Black people, and we're going to have to make some critical choices. So I'm happy that we're doing this show.
Oh, yeah. So am I. And I'm going to start it off with this right here. Sister Reed, I know like me, you're a baseball fan. Now, I like football, but I also am a baseball fan. And being a baseball fan, I've always rolled with my Bay Area teams, the A's and the Giants. And growing up, I was real fortunate because when I was about 10, 11 years old, I found out that my great uncle Dan, who was my man, my life, had a friend. And his friend was the Say Hey Kid, Willie Mays. Who played center field.
I'm jealous about this right here, what he's talking about. Go ahead, Brother Tony. I'm just being honest. But go ahead. Go ahead. I'm jealous. Go ahead.
Center field for the San Francisco Giants, who played at Candlestick Park. But back in the day, they played in New York City and Upper Manhattan in the Polo Grounds. And on September 29th, 1954, game one of the 54 World Series, they were playing the Cleveland Indians. And Victor Wirtz hit a deep fly ball to center field that should have been a home run. But however, Willie Mays made an over-the-shoulder catch while on the run to record the out, and his throw back to the infield prevented runners from advancing. The Giants won the game 5-2 in extra innings, and eventually they won that World Series. And that the catch is known as one of the greatest baseball plays in history.
That's right. Yes, indeed.
And on a personal note, because I used to always tease Marco, you know, you tell me you know Willie Mays. You don't know Willie Mays, man. We used to go to the games. I'd be like, you don't know Willie Mays. And one day we go to the game, and Giants were playing their West Coast rivals, the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up winning like 2-1. And so people are getting ready to leave, and we're just sitting there, and I'm like, Uncle Dan, you ready to roll? He's like, hang on for a minute. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm sitting there, and I'm, you know, speaking to people as they are walking past. And he gets up, and he says, hey, come on. And so I get behind him, and we're walking down the steps. And then I realize we're going onto the field. I'm like, hey, where? He's like, come on. We end up in the Giants dugout, and the next thing you know, I'm sitting there looking at Willie Mays and Willie McCovey.
And I
turned and looked at my big uncle, my great uncle, and I went, okay, so I was wrong. And Willie Mays and Willie McCovey just started laughing. And the cool part about them was they were very personal. These dudes was cool. Not only that, though, but you know, before the games and after warming up, they would go out there, they would talk to kids, they'd sign autographs. You see them in the neighborhoods, they speak to kids. Real.
Right.
They were
and,
real.
You know, it's funny talking about this, Brother Tony, because a lot of people would think, oh, you know, how do these two Black players in the majors have the presence of mind? People forget that there was a whole professional Negro league that a lot of these players played in. They knew how to conduct themselves. They knew how to, you know, say hi to the crowd and be there for the children. And that is so important for Black mentorship purposes in our community. But you're right, brother. I love me some Giants. Love them.
Exactly, because Willie Mays at 15 played in the Negro Leagues.
Yes, he did.
And he played for a championship team called the Clowns that won the championship in the Negro Leagues at 15 years old.
At 15.
And see, a lot of people don't understand the history, but
exactly.
Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Satchel Paige. All them cats played in the Negro Leagues.
I mean, if there were, you know, listeners, for those of you who want to see some entertainment about this type of thing, check out Bingo Long and the Traveling, what's it called? All-Stars. I think
Bingo Long
the
and the Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Tony. I knew you'd know. Yes, indeedy. But you're right about Willie Mays. See, I'm jealous, y'all, because I never got to meet Willie in person, but I have seen him and Willie McCovey play at Candlestick Park. We would be up in the nosebleed section where, you know, a harsh wind would blow and everything be shaking, but we was out there watching, and they were something.
Okay, that shake was real, too.
You ain't never lied. Yeah, the bleachers start swaying, and okay, all righty.
Boy, them bleachers start swaying, and that was real.
That was real. That was really real. Mm-hmm. That was a great show, Brother Tony. Yeah, I bet your big uncle didn't have to worry about you. You have to know more about Willie Mays, see.
Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know where Gabby was when we got home that evening, and my great uncle smoked a pipe. And I'll never forget this. We got in and we walked in, and he lit his pipe, and he had turned on the TV to KBHK Channel 44.
Yeah.
And just so happened the sports was on, and they was talking about the game, and he just looked over at me, and I just looked at him, and I had that big cheesy smile on my face like, yeah.
You know what? And these are the things that we remember. And listeners, this is why to not just talk to your children and the children that you take care of, but actually get them to listen and take them places and talk to them about their people. Because Black people in this country have done some wonderful, wonderful things. And they should know about that. They don't have to drop their head or drop their gaze from anybody. Because we are a mighty, mighty people. But Brother Tony, that was a great share. I like that. That's a good way to start off. Woof.
Yeah, that was one of my childhood things. That was just one of them. Because one of my other uncles worked at the Oakland Alameda Coliseum, and I ran into a lot of Raiders, including my man John Madden and Coach Madden. Hey, Coach Madden was real people.
There's something about John Madden that really, you know, he connects with a lot of people. I don't even like football, and I like John Madden. Just like
hey,
I don't
Coach
really
Madden.
Like football, but I like people like Ditka and Tom Flores, you know, not to mention the players, you know, like Jim Brand. Folks like that. I mean, it's just that I love baseball because I spent so much time with my mom out at Candlestick Park riding the jitneys to get there. People don't know what a jitney is. It's like a little van that runs the same way that the buses run, but a lot faster. So good talk. To start off.
You know, and only if you was in the Bay, you would understand that jitney.
Yeah, come on now.
If you was in San Francisco, you'd understand that jitney. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's
and, you know, but that's
yeah.
The good old Muni.
The Muni, man. That what was it, yellow and green?
Yep.
Yeah, man.
You know, and people don't realize in the Bay Area, the Muni, AC Transit,
mm-hmm.
and the cable cars, they all
mm-hmm.
ran on a schedule to where they all connected with each other in every part of the city.
Yes, they did.
I have to get, you know, I have to get them credit for that because you could get off one and wait 5-10 minutes and get on the other one.
Yep, you didn't have more than 10 minutes to wait. And just
that's how they operated. Their schedule was right on time.
Yeah, and the jitneys ran in between that. So we're talking
exactly.
about the time where you can get on it. And man, when them jitneys took off, you make a right-hand turn, everybody moving to the right. You make a left-hand turn, everybody moving to the left. So they didn't play. Them drivers was on it. They were
they
on
was
it.
On it.
Yep.
And
sure
they knew what they was doing in the city.
Those were the good old days, Minnesota. They really were.
Yes, indeed.
I'll never forget them. Never forget them as long as I live. So, but yeah, so what we want to talk about now, I know what I have. I'm going to be doing some, we're going to be doing back and forth, and I've got some recent history because I have a list of 100 black businesses that was given to me by Reverend Dr. Floyd G. Harris, Jr., and I'm going to be reading out some of those lists because, you know, folks, we talk about it on the show how West Fresno is being gentrified. Well, these businesses are all long gone from the 70s up until now, so... when it's my turn to go, I'm going to be reading these throughout
the
show.
Well, if it's one you want to drop in, go right ahead.
Okay, well, here we go. I'm going to start at the top of the list. Jazzy Jeans and Things, I'm not sure. I think they might still be around on Fresno Street near G.
Who was that?
I think that's Bobby Griffin's shot. Jazzy Jeans and Things. So they might still
be
around,
right.
But here, so Snake Road Hut, John Holland Sugar Hill, Scott's Cleaners, the Kaysen Hotel.
Okay, slow down. Slow down.
Okay. Well, let me
Sugar Hill.
Sugar Hill. Okay.
Sugar Hill. Sugar Hill
you know
was a black owned nightclub. Sugar Hill.
Okay.
Was a black owned nightclub. And I can't speak for you, but I can speak for many of my relatives went there because they would go to Sugar Hill and see folks like B.B. King.
Okay.
A lot of blues artists came through Fresno, and they didn't always go to the Rainbow Ballroom.
Right.
They did what they called the Chitlin Circuit.
Right.
And they would play the local black clubs. B.B.
Mm-hmm.
King went through Sugar Hill. Bobby Blueland went through Sugar Hill. Etta James rolled through Sugar Hill.
Wow.
So we are talking in the black community names that we know.
Exactly.
Johnny Taylor played Sugar Hill.
Okay, now we're getting down to the grip right now if you're talking about Johnny Taylor.
So, and, you know, I can't speak for you, but I can speak for me. I know the blues. I grew up on the blues because in my family, the blues had a mainstay. They got played.
Yes, indeedy.
I remember one of my aunts. On Saturdays, if you stayed with my Aunt LK and you got up to clean, the first song you heard was, "Hey, lady, your husband is cheating on us."
That is something. No, we played some blues at our house. I remember my mom very, very clearly playing Brooke Benton's "A Rainy Night in Georgia." Oh, my goodness. So, yes, indeedy. B.B. King, oh, yeah.
I'm going to tell you this.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say this. There isn't a black family generationally that if you go back and look through that 45 collection, on that album collection, you got some B.B. King, you got some Bobby Grant, Johnny Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look here.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Got some Betty Wright. I'm trying to remember that father-daughter combo from Stax Records. You know who I'm talking about. It was the father, and I'm not talking about the Staples singers, y'all. This was a father-daughter combo.
Rufus Thomas and his daughter.
Yes, that's right. Thank you, Rufus Thomas. I could not think of his name.
Rufus Thomas and his daughter, And I think her name was Carla. I'm not sure, but I think her name was Carla. But Rufus and his daughter,
Yeah, you got it right. And I thank you for that about Sugar Hill. So I'm just going to read a couple more of these, and then I'm going to throw it back to you. So Sugar Hill, Scott's Cleaners, Kaysen Hotel, Mr. Fane's Barbershop, Waller's Cleaners, Danny Wright Auto Repair over on Whitebridge, Wagner's Tavern, Hendrix's Shoe Shine Parlor, Lynn Tucker's Beauty Supply, and Bigby's Dress Shop. Oh, and here's my last one, Dr. Fritz A. Marius, MD. Brother Tony?
All right. And, you know, the funny thing is, a lot of people don't realize before they made the change on California Avenue, when California used to run straight across, and you actually had to make a left turn to get on Ventura right there by Triangle's Cafe that sat in the triangle.
Right, right.
And I know you remember this, because once upon a time, in order to go to Ventura, when you got to that Ventura, you had to make a left turn. Excuse me. You had to make a left turn to get on Ventura and pass right by Triangle Cafe, because it sat in a natural triangle. Mm-hmm. That's how it got its name.
Yes, it did.
But California ran straight down, and when you went down to the end of California and where it ran in Elm, there were doctor's offices. One of the first black doctors on our side of town was Dr. Ulysses Curry, who was our family doctor.
My grandma's doctor.
Him,
yes, indeed.
Him and Dr. Smith had offices down there, right around the corner from Rudy's, which was on the west side of the street. And that's when they had the old school fountain grill in Rudy's.
Now we're going way back now. You're talking about the fountain Rudy's. Yes, indeed.
Exactly. I'm talking about the original Rudy's that we, I can speak for myself, that I went through.
Mm-hmm.
See, I remember those days.
It was a bustling neighborhood. Now, those doctors were over here. Now, there were people like Dr. Freddie Hayes, who was over on Calaveras. And I think there was another black doctor with him over there. But Dr. Curry was over here on this side of town. And, oh, my goodness. Yeah, man, those were good times. We had everything over here. We really
yes,
did.
Indeed.
We did not have to go out of our neighborhood to get things done. There was a Five and Dime, a Mercantile. There were places where you could just buy bobby pins, and not just at Rudy's, but you could buy fabric and things like that. And how do I know this? Because my mother was a seamstress for 60 years. So we were over there a lot. And just think about it, listeners, the money that was in our neighborhood in West Fresno, the money turned over, a dollar would turn over several times before it left West Fresno. It's not like that now. It's not like that now. Now, a dollar might turn over one in West Fresno before it leaves, but usually not. Why? Because we only have one big box supermarket over here, but we got a whole lot of liquor stores.
That was all part of their major game plan. So, all right.
That's right.
And with that being said, I'm going to get back into our black history. And, you know, we always talk about movie stars and whatnot, but at 7 years old, Ernest Frederick Morrison was the first black child movie star signed to a long-term contract. In 1919, he was paid $10,000 a year, making him the highest paid black actor in Hollywood at the time. In today's money, that's about $100,000 a year.
Good grief.
He was 9 years old. He acted at several of the Hollywood studios. Because the way his contract was set up, he could work for any of them. And yes, mm-hmm. it wasn't like he was out there for someone else.
Right.
Him and his family collected their money.
That was wow. That was unusual for him not to be tied to one studio. That's great.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know that you know whoever negotiated young Parker's contract did him right.
Mm. Wow.
Did him
That's
right.
Amazing.
Now also, James Hemming was the first American to train as a chef in France. James Hemming was a black man who was enslaved by Thomas Jefferson when he was 8 years old. You know Thomas Jefferson signed his name on the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
right. One of the founding fathers.
One of the founding fathers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, Sally Hemings was his concubine, his sister-in-law. He was a half-sister of his first wife. Yeah, okay. Wow. So this brother, was a chef in France, you say?
He trained as a chef in France.
Wow. That's impressive.
Remember Jefferson had some ties to France as what they would call a ambassador now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
So he sent James
Hemming.
Mm-hmm. He sent James Hemming to France to train as a chef. But also remember he was enslaved by Thomas Jefferson at 8 years old.
Wow. Yeah, that peculiar institution, as some would call it in the history books, that was chattel slavery, that peculiar institution. Mm. Wow.
See, I told you I was going to hit you with some you may know and some you may not know.
Right. Well, you let me know when I'm up because I don't want
oh, no.
to.
Go, if there's something else you want to throw out there, go right ahead.
Well, I wanted to talk about, and people probably do know this, I know that they've probably heard of the Freedmen's Bureau that was established in 1865, and from that came Freedom Schools. And these were established by African Americans themselves, literate black men and women, opened new and self-sustaining schools. And there were a lot of people who were not maybe trained as a teacher, but who took on that role. And in the South, there was a sister named Mary Peake. She was a black teacher for contraband at Fortress Monroe. And this was in 1861, September 1861. She was the first black teacher from the North the first black teacher from the North may have been Charlotte Fortune, who taught at St. Helena's for 2 years. And so we have to commend these black men and women who knew how to read and write, who might not have been trained as educators, but who took on the role because there was such a hunger for knowledge. Because remember, chattel slavery dictated that men and women who were black Africans could not learn how to read and write. They wanted to keep them ignorant. And so...
Exactly.
Yes, and so go ahead, Brother Tony. Learning to read and write is the first step in becoming, you know, a whole free person. And they did not want
and
that.
And Sister Peake, do me a favor, explain the term contraband to them as it relates to this subject.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Brother Tony, because I had meant to do that and got waylaid in my thoughts. Contraband were the wives, the children, who followed along behind troops, whether they were northern or southern troops. But, you know, of course they're going to follow the northern troops. And they would camp where the units were camped. And a lot of them took on roles as ditch diggers, as laundresses, as cooks, and as, you know, they would help with the burying of soldiers who had fallen in the field. And a lot of them were family. You know, if their husbands had decided to try to join up or were waiting around trying to join up with the white soldiers of the North, they took their whole families with them, and that is what contraband, that's what contraband was, Brother Tony.
Thank you very much for that explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know some are sitting out there going, contraband, well, you know, that's stuff that you done stashed somewhere. No, that's not what it means in this particular situation.
No, no, and thank you for that question, because yes. And that's some serious stuff, because think about, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of people following, you know, these troops around. So that's not a small task.
You are absolutely correct about that, because you think about it, you had enough people following these troops. It's like a small village.
Thank you. A movable village. That's right. That's
a movable
exactly
village.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
Now,
and so the people in charge had to deal with that. You know, the generals and the captains and all of that. They had to keep everybody safe. And eventually, when black men were allowed to serve, well, of course, that's a whole other chapter in this story of the Civil War, or as the white people, MAGA people, like to say, the war between the states. They don't want to call it the Civil War.
Yeah, it's funny how that got labeled like that.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of them still say that. A lot of older white people who are Southern and believe along those kind of lines will not say Civil War. They will say the war between the states. And I'm sure if you are hanging around someplace like Stone Mountain, in Georgia, where it's supposed, that's supposed to be like their holy shrine down there. Yeah, you're going to hear that term, the war between the states, or the succession war, something like that, where they idolize these people who wanted to keep others enslaved. Well, we're still fighting that same
exactly
battle today.
As my grandmother used to say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And in a lot of ways, certain things have stayed the same. We continue to fight that battle for equality. And we will be doing that when you leave here, when I leave here, black folks will still be fighting for equality.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. Some of us thought, okay, well, when, you know, I'm just going to speak for the people who were coming of age in the 50s and the 60s, maybe even the 40s, who thought, well, you know, when these old races die out, you know, things will get better. Well, that's not the case, y'all. We still got people who think they're better than others for whatever reason, you know, and I'm not pointing a finger. But if you happen to be European-Americans and you're listening to this show, it might be some folks in your family. You know, it might be some people that you know, that you work with, who believe that they're better than others because their skin happens to be of a lighter shade. That whole colorism.
Unfortunately, that's a true statement. You see it every day in the media. People attacking folks based on their color, based on what they think somebody is, based on, well, I'm making more money than you and you got to do what I do. You work at this type of a job. And usually it's them pale folks out there clowning. There's a reason why they're called Karens.
Yes, indeed. Tell it, brother. So, tell it to me. Stand
you know, and that's just being honest. That's just being truthful. Because the minute a black woman does something in this nature, she's an angry black woman. He's an angry black man. Look at him acting like criminals, acting like thugs. We get labeled real quickly.
Oh, I was just sharing yesterday with Reverend Harris that I remember being at a job, and you know I'm 5'8" in my bare feet, and I'm not a small person. And this my supervisor told me that that at my size that I was intimidating to her. Yes, she did. In other words, I'm this big black woman who is scary to her because I'm standing my ground, I'm speaking in complete sentences, and she felt threatened. Yes, this is a true story, y'all. And I know.
Oh, I know it's a true story.
Many of us have similar, experiences in America, in this land of the free and home of the brave.
Yes, because mm-hmm. See, they want you to bow down and yes, some boss. What can I do for you today, Miss Sally? That's what they want from you. And when you don't do it, and you speak your piece and speak your mind, you're dangerous.
Yes.
Let me say this because I meant to say this at the top of the show. I'm gonna say again. I am proud. Brother Deion Sanders and his team, the Colorado Buffaloes, because a lot of folks had already decided that TCU was going to mop the floor with them. But the reason why I'm proud of these young men, it ain't so much that they won this game. It's the fact that they won this game when there were so many naysayers out there, so many people out there who was mad at the fact that when Deion Sanders took over this program and just did what black men do, made a bold statement. I'm coming to Boulder, and I'm bringing my luggage, and I'm bringing Louie with me. So those of you who don't want to be here, I suggest you transfer. They was mad at him for using the transfer portal to his advantage, which is something that white coaches have been doing ever since the transfer portal came along. But
right.
Deion went in there and actually truly used it. He made some big changes. He must have brought about 60, 70 kids through that transfer portal, and every one of them kids is top rate. He brought a lot of kids from Jackson State, and you've seen a lot of them on that field Saturday.
Wow.
They delivered, and that bothers a lot of people.
Yeah, we're not supposed to be afraid to do that, things like that.
And Deion made a statement. He said, I know that it bothers a lot of you to see a confident black man sitting here, walking his walk, talking his talk. He say, I said what we was going to do. We did it. My kids bagged it up. He say, so you might as well get used to it. He say, because I'm about to get comfortable.
Mm.
Now, I already know what that means. Now, this was one game, and a lot of people say, well, it's just one game. I understand that. But when he said, I'm about to get comfortable, look here, 2 or 3 years from now, Colorado going to be back to where they were. They're going to be back to where they were, national champions.
Wow.
See, a lot of people don't remember them winning national champions. I do because I follow college football. And let me tell you, it's coming. Let that man get there and get comfortable. It's coming. They're getting ready to do some things. But, yeah, I just wanted to say that, and now I'm going to jump back into what we're talking about tonight. And I think you're going to like this one, Sister Reed. So, before he became a world-famous actor, Samuel L. Jackson fought tirelessly to improve conditions for black students on his college campus. His college campus was Morehouse. And he fought tirelessly and argued with the administration, even holding Martin Luther King Sr. hostage to draw attention to the issues at the school. And finally, administrators agreed to some of the much-needed changes. He did get expelled from Morehouse for his actions.
Wow, that's deep. They kicked him out.
Yeah, he got expelled.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. Being a revolutionary is rough. And,
it's rough.
You know what? This is a good lead-in to what I'm about to say about something that we talked about in one of our previous shows. This was a January 16, 2023 show called The Revolutionary King. And we talked about that the king's view of nonviolence was transmuted in him coming out against the Vietnam War. Well, you know, it was fine for white society as long as he was only talking about civil rights and rights for black people. But when he started talking about the Vietnam War and what nonviolence means globally and all of that, then King was a problem. And you have to remember, listeners, that a lot of people, black and white, did not like Dr. King at the time that he was alive. He had a lot of enemies, both black and white. And but that nail in the coffin, so to speak, was the Vietnam War, and he had to go after that. But when Dr. King took his Poor People's Campaign to Washington, D.C., he said at the time that he was coming for the government to cash a check. They're coming in for his check. And he broke it down and explained to us about the subsidies and other forms of white privilege that, you know, European Americans, as we call them now, enjoy. But if you remember that the Revolutionary King existed and he fought his battle on his home ground, and he took it around the globe and around the nation, and had a really hard time. Remember, Dr. King got stabbed, I believe it was in New York. Somebody tried to kill him, and I'm talking about up close and personal. So that is one of the things I wanted to add to the show tonight about some things that people might not know or remember about Dr. King. And he is very well known now. People love him now, but they didn't always love him. Brother Tony?
Right. And the thing about now is, as you know, they take Dr. King and they really try to, like you say, they try to mute some of the things he's done. During his Poor People's March of Washington, when he took his folks there, and even during the March of 63, I Have a Dream speech, what a lot of people don't realize is one of the other reasons he had to go was there were people, and one of them was president at the time, who was Lyndon B. Johnson. Aww. Lyndon B. owned the majority of the stock in the Colt's Arm Factory. The Colt's Arm Factory supplied the U.S. military with their M-16s and M-14s.
Hello.
So when I tell you, and a lot of people act like they didn't know this, but it's out there.
Yeah.
It's on record.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of white folks in politics made money off the Vietnam War.
Oh, yes.
And the last thing they needed was a man, especially a black man, having something negative to say and having the microphone of the world to speak in, to talk about it.
To talk about it. Yes, he was not well loved at the time that he was doing this. And people need to understand that, Brother Tony. And we talked about this on the show, how now everybody want to like Dr. King. Everybody, you know, wants to whitewash his legacy and make it more acceptable for them. You know, but I remember a time as a child, you know, black people having these discussions in their home, whether, you know, do you go with Martin or do you go with Malcolm, you know, and since I have family members, you know, since I have family members who were Black Panthers, you know, and I have family members who are Black Muslims, and that's a whole different deal going on there.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing, yeah.
But different, and so, You know, this is what people don't understand, and I'm talking about European Americans mostly, Brother Tony, because black people are not some big slab monolith. We are our own culture. We have many different things going on in black culture and black lives, and it might not matter to you, but it damn sure matter to us. And this is just one example. So when we talk about the Revolutionary King, we're talking about black people back then who were, some people would say, chess Negroes or house Negroes who were afraid to say anything about anything to white folks to try to improve conditions, quality of life conditions. And so they didn't want Dr. King saying nothing, making trouble. You know, throwing up trouble, that young king, that young whippersnapper. I mean, Dr. King was murdered at 39 years old. The brother didn't even make 40. So it's lucky for us that he started a family early. He married Coretta early and started having his babies because he didn't live very long. Neither did Medgar Evers. Neither did a lot of brothers and sisters who wound up losing their lives in the struggle. And this is one of the reasons why Brother Tony and I are always saying, if you're not registered to vote, get registered and vote. From dog catcher to president, you got to vote, because if not, your silence makes you complicit in your own, oppression. So, Brother Tony, I didn't talk myself out of breath, man. I'm like...
Hey, you was on. There's no need to apologize. You was on a run. I let you go.
I appreciate it. That's
because you felt like you had to get that out. So, that's true. That's just a major thing, and you know, a lot of that ties into the way things go on today. So, getting back into this, born Olua Kosuozo, Cujo Lewis was on the last illegal slave ship to the United States in 1860. He endured 4 years of slavery before he was freed, and then he decided to create his own community. Well, I see we got a caller. Check in. Caller, you are on Westside Visions. Please state your name and go ahead.
It's Dr. Harris. How are you all doing this evening? Freedom Fighter.
Hey, Doc.
All right, now.
I've been listening to you, your rich, rich, beautiful conversation tonight, and you all are hitting on a lot of good points. I mean, it's kind of forgotten, and people have not even talk about anymore.
Because
we're at a tipping point where everybody want to talk about the bells and whistles and roses, but not talk about the real reality that the government intentionally, when I say government, I'm talking about the U.S. government, intentionally assassinated all of our freedom fighters, the Black Panther Party, the Deacons of Defense in New Orleans. And the list just goes on and on and on and on. And, you know, our generation of, you know, those that know that I'm a civil rights leader and I do a lot of heavy lifting and, you know, motivational speaking and different things. Folks can go to YouTube and look at all the stuff over the 40 years. It come with a cost. Freedom came with a cost. Freedom wasn't free. And, you know, we have to teach our young people, the next generation, the truth. The Bible says the truth shall set you free. And this is why the Western European school system don't want to teach the truth, because it does not want our children to be free. And this is why it's important that we have Saturday schools, the Freedom School, where we bring in our historians, we bring in our elders, we sit those young people down, teach them the truth about
mm-hmm.
what has happened to their people in this country.
See.
A lot of people don't even know about Black Wall Street. Talking about our children. So if you don't teach history, history will repeat itself. That's our job, to teach our history. It's not white folks' job. That's our job. We got
That's
to
right.
get off our lazy. We got to get off our lazy behind, right? Not all of us, but a lot of us need to get off our lazy behind and use the tools that we have today for the internet, other than looking at TikTok and all this other rock stuff that they got going on, and understand how do we build community. Listen, we had communities in this country. We had over 30-something cities built in this country. Well, where are they? They were burnt down. They were destroyed. 36 blocks, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. 36 blocks of business, black business, that was built by black people. It takes me back to West Fresno. I hope, Arlene, I got on the show late that you read off some of those businesses that we had here at one point in time in West Fresno, because it was the government that destroyed Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. The same government that destroyed West Fresno.
Yeah.
Redevelopment.
That's right.
That wiped out all black homes, all black businesses, all black churches. And we have never been able to bounce back in this community. While the East Indian, while our Hmong brothers and sisters, while our Native Mexican Americans, they're all thriving now. Because their communities wasn't targeted like black communities.
Right.
So when you drive around.
Not only that, Pastor. Those communities you just named off, the government had a financial stake in them. Our Hmong brothers and sisters, they got paid. East Indians, when they came here, they got paid. The Indian tribes, they got paid, quiet as is kept. They got paid and got allowed to open up casinos in certain areas. So go back to what you were talking about.
And so when we look at the injury, I'm going to use the word intentionally, engineering. So when we use the word for the listening audience, engineering, meaning that something was drafted
right
for a purpose, not to enhance black people, but to destroy black people. See, what we have to understand, and I don't really think people really understand this Western European school system. It's poison to black people.
Yeah.
They want you to think that, you first of all, you go and you teach us to eat wrong, because you tell us that we should be drinking milk. We should not be drinking milk. See, they start that engineering piece in preschool, man. We're not supposed to be drinking milk. Milk was for the calf of a cow.
Right.
Not for human beings.
Right.
But capitalism jumped in the way and said, no, you can drink milk. We're going to engineer this milk where humans can drink it. And we don't understand that the food in America is poison. Taking it way back, and I'm going to bring it back up to today. Because you have to understand that food has a lot to do with the way you think.
Yep.
If you constantly eating sugar and eating salt, it's going to have an effect on your body. Our bodies were made to eat vegetables, not meat. And I know a lot of folks will argue that with me, and I'm not here to argue with nobody. You love meat, you love meat. I ain't going to say I stopped eating because I haven't. But what I'm telling you is that you have to do your own research. If you hear Eileen, if you hear Brother Tony, Sister Eileen, talk about do your research. I don't want nobody to listen. These two people on this radio is not going to misguide you. I can tell you that right now. I already know they're doing research before they even get on the show. I know what it takes to run shows, okay? But even though I know what it takes to run show, you have to do your own research. It's free.
Yeah.
Don't take anybody else just because they said it. For truth, go research it. And so when we understand that just using milk as a talking point, you have to understand, well, where do we get the milk from? Well, we get it from a cow. Well, how do they get the milk? Well, they rape the cow. Put it in bars. Put their head in bars. And they put the suction cups on their breasts.
Yeah, they do.
The breast is so full of milk that it starts cutting the top of the breast, the suction cup.
Ew.
And then it starts bleeding. And then the bleed and the flies come, and then it starts forming maggots and pus start going in to the milk that they suck in, man. And then the USDA says, we took some of it out, but it's okay to have some of the pus in the milk. So when you go drink milk, you're drinking pus milk, man.
Even though
it's passed through our body. That nipple was for the calves. But America, the land of the free and home of the brave, teaches us certain things that's killing us when we're in preschool. That's number one with the food. That's why it's important for us to grow our own food. But then you have to understand what land that was given to black people after slavery, even from plantation masters, gave land to black people. The Klan came and ran them off.
That's right. Took it.
So we weren't even able to grow our own food. Why? Because we were even being murdered or lynched or ran off by the Klan. And then, so you're talking about a people, black people, African people, who came over on these ships. We built America. We invented everything in this place, from the refrigerator to the elevator to the golf tee, couplers that goes on a train. We have invented everything. But yet, do you think the public school system will empower our children to give them self-esteem? To say, look what your ancestors did? No, they're not going to do that. That's why I go back and say it's our responsibility. Do you know here in West Fresno, we don't even have a black tire shop, man. Many cars that you see on Sunday morning goes to these churches. You would think that and I brought this up to Pat, but see, what do I know? What do I know? Harris is just a troublemaker. But see, I understand economics. If you had five churches come together, big, medium, and small, and say, look, we're going to open up our own black tire shop, unapologetic. We're going to employ people out of our institutions to work here. And they're going to service our cars, and we're going to pay them. Now, see, that's Black Wall Street. Now you got the money circulating in our community. See, our money don't circulate anymore. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, it circulated like 13, 14, 15 times before it left. And if you have a community and your money ain't circulating, you're going to die. And that's why the Arabs, the Indians, East Indian, and all of them own the service stations, own the grocery stores, own the convenience stores, because, see, I believe they have a union. They have a union. They all know each other. They all know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're going to buy this one over here. Then we're going to buy that one over there. Then we're going to buy this. Ain't nobody going to know. But we all family. So what I'm saying is, why is that black people, since we already know that they have destroyed the black community in West Fresno intentionally, not unintentionally, but intentionally, then we still have a chance if we will come together as a people.
Right.
But see, there's too much crawdaddish mentality, the reason why we can't. See, I'm a leader.
I don't always have to lead.
I can be a cheerleader.
Right. Let me ask you a question, Rev. What is your opinion of the Black Chamber of Commerce? Because I know there might be some listeners out there. We don't get a lot of local listeners. I don't know. Maybe we do. But I know that the Black Chamber, as it exists now, hasn't always been there. They have a new, improved Black Chamber of Commerce. Everything that you said, I agree with. You know, I'm speaking for myself. I agree with it. I know what redevelopment did to West Fresno. Do you think that we are overstating what we are saying because, oh, well, you know, y'all got the Black Chamber of Commerce. What about that? What about all the stuff they're doing? So let me ask you, Greg, what's your opinion of?
Let me give the history of it. So about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, we had two Black Chamber of Commerce. Again, that's us. You always got to have two split. And I was fortunately at the time was able to help engineer to get one Black Chamber of Commerce, which was good, right? And I was on the board at the time, right? Because I have a business too as well. And we helped establish that Black Chamber of Commerce. I think I was on the board for like 3 years. And in the course of time, you know, people get off and new people come on, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I've been able to, this year, or was it last year, was able to go through a portion of a contracted program with the Black Chamber. I think, so they are, use the word, trying to do something. But at the same time, we have to understand, no matter what we do, there's some politics behind it. And I'm talking about City Hall, I'm talking about Board of Supervisors and all that type of stuff, right? And I think that when we start looking for funding and opportunities and grants and stuff like that, those folks inside of the chamber has to walk soft. Because you don't want to get certain people upset at City Hall, or you don't want to get certain people upset at Sacramento. The funding may not come down the way that you want it. So as people know me, I'm very outspoken, right? And when I say outspoken, I'm outspoken for justice for black folk, brown folks, justice, right? So in a lot of cases, they can't speak out like I can. Because they may lose something on this end or lose something on that end, right? Every business that joins for a certain reason or what have you, or whatever the case is, you have to get in there and figure out how you can work it for yourself. Here's what I say. I've been saying this for years. And I'm going to use the word classism, if I will. Classism. There's classism in the black community. So you have your uppity blacks who may live up north. You may have your middle class blacks, you know, working blacks. And then you have poor folk. And then you got the gang community, right? And I say that all of them have something to bring to the table. Even a gangbanger. You say, well, Harris, why can you say a gangbanger could be a businessman or businesswoman, well, number one, they know how to count money. They got a product. They understand their territory. They understand their environment. Now, we understand that that may be on a negative level, right?
Right.
But how do we go and bring resources to them to say, hey, there's a better way?
Right.
See, to me, our upper class and middle class is not going to touch that down. And I'm using the word, for lack of better words, and they should use gang member. But you know what I'm saying.
Mm.
They still have something to bring to the table. But if we don't create them for all of our community, I'm going to use the word village. The village. They're part of our community. The brothers hanging on the street corner. Well, who's going to deal with them? Oh, well, we're going to call the police. I can walk anywhere in West Fresno and be accepted by our brothers and sisters. Why? Because they understand that I'm not going to come and judge them. I'm not going to put them down. I give respect to get respect. And if I or my folk, we go out, we're going out to bring resources to our people. So then that brings in the poverty piece. Because if we're not going to be worrying about those at the bottom that people call at the bottom, then they're going to be the grant funding source for the city hall and the police department.
See.
So we just can't just keep worrying about the middle class. We got to worry about everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I hope I
agree.
Answered your question.
Yeah, you did, brother. And Brother Tony and I have seen what de facto segregation have done to West Fresno, because integration helped to kill a lot of stuff. And when we did have segregation, not that I'm saying it was a good thing, but all those classes that you talked about had to live in one area together, and they had to learn how to get along. So anyway.
Our power is a unity consciousness. And them dead presidents. When I say dead presidents, I'm talking about that money that they made and put their slave owners' faces on the $50 bill and hunting all them slave owners, okay? So they mind us every day that we've been owned by these people on that money, okay?
Yeah.
Now, why is it so hard? I'm going to go back to the church again. The church is. Why is it so hard for us to come together and use one bank? Because we know we're bringing money in every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that if we could come together and use one bank and leverage that bank for the benefit of our people to say, hey, we're bringing in X amount of millions of thousands of dollars. We want small business loans for our filling our institutions.
Mm-hmm.
We have black banks.
Yeah, that's true. Brother Tony.
We want to go to Bank of America, Wells Fargo.
Right. Brother Tony, didn't we talk about that idea of a black credit union our last show?
Yes, we did. And as I was telling you, one of the things that I loved about when I lived in Nevada and in Vegas, we had a black credit union in North Las Vegas. And when it started out small. But what I liked about it was it made community loans. It did things of that nature to the point to where they got certified by the FCC and turned into a full-fledged bank.
Mm.
And see, and that's what we have to understand. You can start small, but you can become big. But it's like anything else. You got to learn how to, you got to crawl before you learn how to walk.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done. You just have to want to do it.
So there it is, Rev. I mean,
Why can't we do it? Why can't we do it in West Fresno? We know the need is there. People been talking about it for a long time. And the churches could be the base of that. You're right, with the tithing every week. And wow, it's a lot of potential.
We have so many brilliant, smart people in our village. I'm going to keep using the word village. This community thing, I'm talking about the black village right now that has been dismantled. We have to go back like the Black Panthers did. They gave us the 12-point program. See, all of it's laid out. We just got to follow it.
Mm-hmm. Brother Tony, weren't we just talking about this? What was it, yesterday? That you had changed, you had put the 12-point program, put it up so people could look at it on the, I forget what it's called. But you know what I'm talking about, brother.
Well, yeah. I posted it several different places. It's on my Spoutable page. And for those of you who are not familiar with Spoutable, Spoutable is the same as Twitter, but it's run by a black man, Christopher Buzzy. And it has blown up and taken off, and it's the real deal. And for those of you sitting out there on Twitter or X, you need to come on over to Spoutable and join what's real. But I also posted it there and posted it also in several other places, and the response to it was amazing because there are a lot of old school folks out there like us who understand that Black Panther platform.
That's right.
And there were a lot of folks who – there were a lot of folks, and I'll just be honest, a lot of white folks who looked at it and went, hey, some of this sounds like what they do in government. Mm-hmm. And my statement to them was, well, what do you think the government got it from?
Hello. Hello. Because black people know how to make something out of nothing. So isn't it interesting that the three of us talking about the Panthers and the we don't have to reinvent the wheel. All we got to do is
And like I always say, often imitated, never duplicated. See, someone brought up the WIC program. I say you have the Black Panther Party to thank for the WIC program. That's where American government got it from. Oh, no, they thought, no, they did. See, they saw the Black Panthers with their breakfast program and saw how it started in one place and ended up in 14 different counties.
Mm-hmm.
Were getting met on a daily basis before they went to school.
But they don't want to give
seniors' needs were getting met on a daily basis for those who didn't have access to a meal every day. And even though I know we were talking about Black history, since we're gonna go there tonight, this is where we're going. Because I keep hearing Pastor Harris talk about the community, so we'll stay on that vein.
Mm.
A lot of times we get overlooked.
Yeah,
why? Said earlier, Sister Reed, people are afraid of us. They see black folks and they look at us and go, wow, why they so loud? Why they stand so tall? They intimidating. Because like I said, they want us to put our head in our chest. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Miss Daisy. We ain't like that no more. You can catch these hands, but you need to treat us with respect.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, Pastor, it can be done. We just got to start doing it. Like you say, we got to stop talking about it and start being about it.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad Rev called into the show tonight because really
And get on back into what you've been to, Pastor. Don't stop there.
I
just think that, you know, our women plays a major part, like Aline. The men play a major part, and we have to understand that anything that we build, the enemy is going to try to come and destroy it. So we have to be able to secure it. When I say secure, I'm talking about security, right? To protect, right? To make sure that what we build. Because what we build, we're building for the next several generations. not just for us. We're building it so that our children, great-great-grandchildren, nieces, or what have you, can be able to have something, a platform to work with. Our platform in Fresno, Black Fresno, has been dismantled. And so that's what we're doing tonight, having a conversation. See, organizing, when Dr. King and Ralph Abernathy was here, all started in a living room, somebody's living room. And they expanded from there. But what's interesting, Brother Tony, that I find, and Sister Eileen, and the listening audience, maybe you all can explain this to me. Our ancestors, 1921, you can go even further than that, all the way up to where we are today. They didn't have iPads. They didn't have TikTok. They didn't have laptops. They didn't have Facebook. I'm talking about in 1921, where our whole community was built. They did not have the resources that we have today, but what I find interesting, that what they had that we don't have today is unity. They had unity. Because a lot of them was being treated the same way, talked to, put down, shot, murdered, raped. But we bring it up to the 1921st century. Corporate America now handpicked certain Black people to go work in their corporate America. And so it neutralized them. And I'm not saying that they don't deserve to make a living wage and all that. But what I'm saying is that when you're neutralized, that means you really can't come back and help your folk because you might lose your job.
That's right.
And I think that's what where we're at today dealing with. You know, 'cause like I tell middle-class Black people and friends all the time, they get upset at me. Like, oh, here you go again. I said, no. I've been doing civil rights for close to 45 years in Fresno, all over the world. And I said, you haven't marched with me not one time, but you work in corporate America. I said, you have not been to the Justice Corner, but you work in corporate America. You make $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, $100,000 plus a year.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but when something go down in the Black community, I know I can't count on you. I said, but you're a beneficiary from the work that we do and get criticized for.
Right. Somebody else.
See, you'll stand behind the curtain, say hurrah, 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 but you won't get out here with us. But you benefit from what we do. I said, I find that interesting.
Mm.
And they just sit there looking silly because they know it's true.
Wow.
Man, I got a house note. I got that. I said, I understand that. I said, if you can't get out here with us, at least you can help finance what we're doing. If you're that scared to be able to show your face because your boss, because the master boss, Mr. Calhoun might see you out here with us, or Mr. Cooper. Finance what we're doing. If you don't want to, I understand. There's many pastors in this community, you know, pat me on the back, shake my hand behind closed doors, but they can't come out here on the front line when your member just got shot in the back because you want to stay friends with the power structure.
Hello.
This is about being loyal to our people.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to go ahead and yield. I don't want to take no more of your time. Just thank y'all for taking my call. But just keep building, keep speaking, keep standing, keep putting it out there. Make people do critical thinking. Keep telling them to do research. Write some essays. Yes. Mail them to Brother Tony. Mail them to Sister Allen. Mm-hmm. If you're too scared to read it online, mail it to them. Email it to them. They'll read it.
Oh, yeah.
Send in questions. Do something instead of not doing nothing. That's what
right.
I'm saying. Our ancestors died for us today. They passed the baton to us. And the best we can do is stand up and be men and women and quit cowering down and buck dancing. Listen, if God, there's a lot of people don't like me. I get that. But God is not going to allow nothing to happen to me if it's not in his will. So I can't walk around in fear. I got to walk around with authority, being wise, waking up my people, giving my people encouragement each and every day. I'm going to yield right there. Thank y'all for having me, and we'll see y'all soon.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
You know, Sister Reed, it is always good to hear from Pastor Harris because I know he's going to come with the truth, and this is why I provide him with an open forum because I know what I'm getting ready to get.
That's right. That's right. You always said that, you know, it's an open forum for him whenever he wants to call in, even if we're not talking about what he wants to talk about. And it's the same for other community members. You've offered that same thing. We have offered that same thing. And we stand by that because we want to hear what you have to say. We want to hear it. We want to learn. We want to build unity. We want to, you know, back in the day when Pan-Africanism was new, we called it nation building. Maybe it's village building now. I don't know. But anyway, Brother Tony, tonight's show was a good show. It was good.
Before we dip, there's still a couple of things I want to go over because we still have no time.
Oh, yay, all right, go for it.
Oh, I'm not bailing out yet because still a couple of things I feel the need to talk about.
Okay, good, because I got some stuff too. Go ahead.
So one of them is, and you hear about her often, and a lot of people don't realize, but this sister stood up 6 feet tall, Stagecoach Mary Fields, who was a real sister, was said to have a temperament of a grizzly bear, tough as nails. She drove over 300 miles each week to deliver mail and was beloved in her town of Cascade, Montana. Now, you heard what I said. Cascade, Montana.
Wow.
All right, now, think about this. This is back in the day. A black woman, and of all places, Montana. So that was a reason why Sister Mary was so tough.
Talking about Montana now. Talking about Sister Mary. Oof.
Well, there are very few. I've had the pleasure of going through there because we have military bases. Yes, they have seen us. And I remember one time when on temporary duty assignment going through there, and I remember telling this guy, you know, there's only two black things out here, the road we came in on and me. And the look on the white man's face was like, whoa. Because, you know, I'm dishonest like that.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And after he got over his initial shock, he was like, oh, okay, I get it. I was like, calm down, man. It was just a joke. Because he was looking for a response, like he didn't know what to say.
Right. We thought you was going to be mad. But, you was going to be that angry black man. Yeah.
But, you know, Mary Fields, you know, she was a big part of the Montana history. And I hope that in that state that they pay homage to her because of Mary, the mail got through.
Hello.
Driving over 300 miles in a wagon.
See.
You got a shotgun protection.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big feat.
I've seen pictures of this sister, and I'm sure that she had to have been, you know, she was a big woman. You know?
Yes, she was.
And in this day and age, she would be considered intimidating. You know, like some of the rest of us who are over 5 feet tall. So, hey, you know, it doesn't matter, though. We're intimidating no matter what. But that is some serious history. So the mail got through. So she was taking passengers as well, probably, that she had to look after them.
She took care of the mail. She also helped out with a lot of mining companies, things of this nature.
Okay.
And
wow,
obviously she had a good relationship with the Native Americans. They didn't bother Mary.
Yeah.
They respected
right.
Mary. Because why? Mary respected them.
Exactly. Wow, that's deep. Now that is some history that's important to know. Cascade, Montana. Huh. I'm going to have to look that up on the map to see what part of Montana that's in, like if it's in the top half, the northern part, or the middle, or the – because people are talking about Montana in different places, wide open spaces like that now, Montana, Wyoming, because of that Yellowstone show that's streaming.
They didn't get caught up in the hype of this series. But see, those of us who were in the military, we already know.
We already know.
I'm going to give you this one, and then we're going to close on this one here.
Okay, go ahead.
Allensworth was the first all-black California township founded and financed by African Americans, created by Lieutenant Allensworth, right here in our Central Valley.
That's right.
And
That's right.
Was created by Colonel Allen Allensworth in 1908, and the town was built with the intention of establishing a self-sufficient city where African Americans could live their lives free of racial prejudice. Now, you and I both know what happened when they start trying to build that community. Farmers had a problem with it because they start being successful. And when you start being successful, folks want to take you out.
They
wouldn't mess with the water line. They wouldn't mess with the water line. The train stop that was there got moved out to another place. Their water wells kept getting salted.
Wow.
But they didn't let that stop them. As of today, Allensworth is still around. And they still fighting a battle.
A water battle at that.
Yep.
And for those of you
who were friends of Allensworth and Sister Reed, I do believe you are one.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. And yes, I am. And it's unfortunate that a decision was made in Sacramento that they were going to combine all of the different chapters, different city chapters of Friends of Allensworth into one big deal and one big unit. And it's unfortunate because there were like 100 members of Fresno's Friends of Allensworth chapter. And Sister Sharon Williams was the president when this happened, and she said that, you know, she lost a lot of people because she was a really good president of her chapter. She kept us informed about when our dues were. The dues were like $15 a year, which was reasonable. And it's unfortunate, but this is what happens when people want to continue to dilute the culture and make it difficult for us, because right now, Allensworth is having problems with floodwaters, and I'm talking recent history, y'all, with floodwaters.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Notification about the flooding. You know, people lost, their homes were damaged. You know, their crops were damaged down there. People are still growing things in the town of Allensworth. And Dennis Hudson, who is a pastor who is doing a lot of work in that area, we are really trying hard to get this brother to come and be our main speaker at this year's Progressive Black Summit, because we want him to talk about water as it relates to black farmers and black people in this valley. So anyway, you're right on the money talking about Allensworth tonight.
All right, so I got about 14 minutes left, so I'm going to go through these, because some of these I want you to hear.
Okay.
The St. John Coal Train African Orthodox Church in San Francisco, California, uses jazz musician John Coltrane's music and philosophy as a source for religious discovery.
Wow. That is something.
For a lot of those on the theological side, they use John Coltrane's music because, baby, there's religion in jazz.
Hello. I love Supreme. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. I love Supreme.
Now, here's one that I definitely wanted you to hear. Nancy Green, who was formerly enslaved and was employed in the 1890s to promote the Aunt Jemima brand by demonstrating the pancake mix at expositions, fairs, was a popular attraction because of her friendly personality, her storytelling skills, and her warmth. She signed a lifetime contract with the company, and her image was used for packaging on the ads and in the ads. Now, this is the real, original Aunt Jemima. The picture that they used to have on the box, that was truly that woman.
Wow. So there really was a person behind I don't want to say the hype, but the picture that's on the box, it was a real-life person.
Her name was Nancy Green.
Wow.
Aunt Jemima, whose real name was Nancy Green, was a real person.
Wow. I have to say, you know, that is some brilliant marketing that they did to have her go around and promote that. And the thing is that, if I'm not mistaken, Aunt Jemima, I think they just recently changed the name to Pearl Milling or something like that. They finally
and now they're known as Pearl Milling, the Pearl Milling Company, because they start, you know, that new age thing. They start catching flack.
Right. Well, they had modernized the woman on the box. They had given her a new hairstyle. There was no handkerchief on her head or anything like that.
You could try to modernize all you want to, but it was the history they felt behind it. And, you know, after a while, it catches up with you.
Yeah,
because, you know, like I know. You know, like I know, growing up looking at that box, you knew what Aunt Jemima looked like.
Yeah, Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, the guy from the Cream of Wheat box, yes, indeed. We had all of that.
But Quaker Oaks was a Quaker. He had on the hat the Quaker uniform, so that was a little bit different.
Yeah, that was different. But the guy on the Cream of Wheat with the soul, you know, with the chef's hat and the big smile, I remember him.
Oh yeah. But you know, but Uncle Ben and Aunt Jemima, that was a whole different groove.
That's true. That's true. You're right. When you write, you write.
And of course, I'm going to talk about Strange Fruit, the song about black lynching in the South, made famous by none other than Billie Holiday. That originally was a poem written by Abel Merpool, who was a Jewish school teacher from New York City.
That's important for people to know, the history of that song.
Exactly.
I did not know it started off as a poem. I didn't. So, folks, I learned something.
Started off as a poem. And for those out there listening that want to check it out, you can always go online, Yahoo Music, which is free. Pull up Strange Fruit and listen to the lyrics. Last but not least, after the success of the Negro Digest, publisher John H. Johnson decided to create a magazine to showcase black achievement while also looking at current effects and issues affecting African Americans. The first issue of this publication, known as Ebony, sold out in a matter of hours.
Wow. Some of us grew up reading Ebony and Jet, both, but Jet was more on the light side, but Ebony, that was a mainstay. Yes.
Ebony was a mainstay. So that was my look at black history, good, bad, indifferent. What I consider to be black history, because to me, it is history. And like I say, Black History is not just in February. It's 7 days a week, 24/7, 365, twice on Sundays.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not sure how much time we got left. I'm going to read a little bit more from this list, maybe just two or three if we have the time
okay.
to do it.
Go right ahead.
Okay. And this is in no particular order. The Oak Room, White's Trucking and Moving, The Juicy Pig, The American Legion, Pink Front, Sanders Variety Store, Ruby's Queen Castle Beauty, Roger Wilson's Grocery, Jackson's Trucking, The 41 Club, Jim Lett Club, Hugh Goodwin Attorney, Phil Caldwell Television, Polite Trucking, Thomas's Flying A Gas Station, Harvey's Notary Service, Floyd White Senior's Wrecking, Hugh Wesley Goodwin Attorney, Queens Castle Beauty Shop, Graves Liquor, Rudy's Elm Street Pharmacy, we talked about that, and last but not least, Mellow's Drive-In.
Now, several of those you've named, yeah, I have history with. You have history with.
Oh, yeah.
Mellow's Drive-In, we definitely have history with. Mellow's Drive-In, Mellow's Ice Cream.
Yes, indeed. Yep.
If you live on the west side, you got your ice cream from Mellow's. I don't care what nobody say. There are a certain group of us, that's what we went to get our ice cream.
You had several flavors, and they were the bomb diggity.
Yes, they was. The hell with Baskin-Robbins. We had Mellow's.
Yeah, we did. Right there at Fresno and Kearney. My goodness. Those were the days.
Yes, indeed. And one day, maybe we'll be fortunate enough to get some of them days back. Sister Reed, I want to thank you for taking this trip with me because I know I can be, kind of pushy about certain stuff sometimes. But, hey.
No, I'm not pushy. You do what you do, and you do it well.
You know, and a shout-out to Pastor Harris because, like I said, we have an open forum. And I appreciate him for taking advantage of that, for not being scared to get on here and speak his piece. For those of you who like to sit back and talk that drag, that phone number is open to you also, 563-999-3043. You better learn to use it. Like I said, we have an open forum. Sister Reed tells you, we have an open forum. We don't mind y'all coming on. We want to hear from you. I'm just going to be honest. It's sad that we have a bigger audience back east, Midwest, down south, than we do right here at home. But I'm going to tell you this. I appreciate all my listeners, both internationally and nationally.
Yes, we do.
And to my rowdy girl, I'm going to holler, hey.
Hey, rowdy girl.
And to my folks in Michigan, I'm going to holler, hey, because I appreciate y'all. Y'all look out for us.
That's right.
Sister Reed. You was getting ready to say something.
No, I was just going to say we appreciate all you listeners because, as I say often, all politics are local. And so what relates in Mississippi Fresno also might relate to where you are. And so we're grateful for your listenership. And please continue to listen and to call in whenever you want. We appreciate
it. Yes, indeed. All right, Sister Reed, let's take it home.
Well, y'all, you know what I'm going to say. This is about a mindset. It's about a mindset. And that being said, we want you all to stay black till we get back with you. Brother Tony?
Yes, indeed. Like I always say, each one, reach one, teach one. Those of you proficient with your arms, and I'm going to say it again, those of you proficient with your arms, take your folks to the range, get them trained up, get them ready to go, get them licensed. Start a neighborhood watch, start a cop watch, watch the people who are watching us. It is time to protect your folks. You know, we talked about earlier these white supremacists, Proud Boys, other folks who are getting these prison sentences. They're getting prison sentences because they chose to stand up with folks who are evil, who are not about doing the right thing. And even though I heard black folks online making excuses for this brother, I'm not going to be one of them. See, like my grandmother used to say, you lay down with dogs, you come up with fleas. He knew what he was getting involved in, and he'd been doing it for a while. And the running behind someone who's spewing hate and divisiveness and evilness, ain't no way in the world I can support that. So, folks, I'm just going to say, we're getting ready to come up into a voting session. Elections are coming. Get your folks registered. Start reading them ballots. Start paying attention to measures locally, statewide, nationally. Pay attention to what you're voting for. Because it's time to get a whole bunch of these folks out of here who ain't doing right. I could think of one in Colorado, and I could think of another one down there in Georgia, and one in Alabama. It's time to get these folks out of office, get some folks in there that you know want to do the right thing, not only for you, but for the country. Because I'm going to tell you, y'all can mess around and let America fall if you want to. You're not going to like what you get. I don't care what color you is, black, white, pink, or purple. White folks, you out here believing that if you take over everything, everything going to be all terrific. No, it won't, because you're going to have some of your own trying to take you out. I don't care what they told you in the Wolf of Wall Street. Greed is not good. Don't buy into that.
Tell it.
So until we holler at y'all this upcoming Thursday, y'all stay safe, take care of one another, and listeners, again, we appreciate you. Until we get to you this Thursday, we'll holler.